A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. You're going to be keeping me company, as a matter of fact. We're going to be talking about, I'm going to call it an example of media bias. I don't know if this was media laziness in addition to media bias. I am well aware of the anti-gun attitudes that are prevalent in the mainstream media. I am also aware of some of the increased pressures on reporters these days. As you've seen a contractions in newsrooms. Reporters are having to do more with less. Don't have as much time to dedicate to researching any particular story. So you've got a couple of issues that come into play here when it comes to reporting on gun-related issues, right? There is the, obviously, again, the anti-gun bias that I think is prevalent, if not inherent, in most newsrooms. But then there's also that time factor. So even if you've got a reporter that does want to do a good job, oftentimes they can't. I don't know what is to blame for this story in the Cleveland Plain Dealer that ran yesterday. Here is the corrected headline. Gun violence is among the leading causes of death for Ohio kids. Experts are alarmed. Now, I wrote about this at Bearing Arms yesterday because the original headline said, gun violence is the leading cause of death for Ohio kids. Experts are alarmed. And I thought to myself, I don't think that's right. So I start looking at the story. The story is based on a report by a group called Children's Defense Fund Ohio. And even the report itself doesn't say that gun violence is the leading cause of death for Ohio children. It says it's among the leading causes, as the Cleveland Plain Dealer headline reads now. But I also noted that there was no hard data in this CDF Ohio report. There were no actual figures about the number of children in Ohio who had died as a result of firearm-related injuries, which I found very odd. But maybe I shouldn't have, because if you look at that CDF Ohio report, you find their history of advocacy. They say this report builds upon Children's Defense Fund's history of gun violence prevention, research, and advocacy, which includes, among other publications and events, the 2023 State of America's Children Report, National Day of Social Action, Ohio on Gun Violence, Ohio Child Access Prevention, Protect Children, Not Guns. And that last one, that's a gun control talking point, right? This isn't some neutral observer here. This is, again, a group with a point of view. And they do make that clear in their report. They also have a list of recommendations. Here's the list. It might be kind of hard for you to read that because there are a lot of recommendations. But a lot of them are gun control recommendations, right? They want child access prevention laws, a one-size-fits-all storage mandate. They want universal background checks, things of that nature. So the Cleveland Plain Dealer relied solely on this report by a biased organization for its story, for its reporting. And I found that problematic. So I wanted to do a little bit of digging. Now, I'll tell you, too, I've got my own deadlines. Monday through Thursday, I generally write 6 posts a day for Bearing Arms. I put together the Cam and Company podcast. So I don't have a lot of time to spend on one particular story. So if I could do this research, I'm pretty sure that the Cleveland Plain Dealer reporters could do this research, too. So I wanted to find out, what is the actual number of child deaths involving firearms in Ohio? And what I found was starkly different than the CDF Ohio report suggests. Now, first of all, a note on how the Children's Defense Fund Ohio reached its conclusion. In this graph, they talk about across age groups, child firearm deaths are higher in Ohio than nationwide. And look to the far right there. Ages 15 to 19. Now look over to the far left, ages 1 through 4. So in other words, the Children's Defense Fund Ohio's definition of a child excludes every child under the age of 1 and adds in adults ages 18 and 19. that's how they get their finding that firearms are among the leading causes of death in Ohio, by excluding the youngest children and by adding in adults and calling them children. That, again, problematic, right? So what I found is that the Ohio Department of Health puts together an annual report on child deaths in the Buckeye State. Not fun reading, by the way, I have to tell you. But the numbers that the Ohio Department of Health comes up with, or came up with in 2023, this is the last report that we have, does not show that firearms are a leading cause of death among children in Ohio. Here's what they found. 64% of child deaths in Ohio were due to medical conditions. Another 31% were due to external injuries. And then another 5% were unknown. Now, firearm-related deaths are among those external injuries. But according to the Ohio Department of Health, firearms were involved in 6% of child deaths across the state from 2018 through 2022. 6%. That is not a leading cause of death. We can talk, I mean, we can say that 6% is too many. 5% of childhood deaths in Ohio in that time period, the result of suicide, another 5% the result of homicide, another 1% result of accidents. And again, we can agree that those numbers are too high, and we want to see those numbers come down. But we don't have to make the emotional yet factually deficient argument that guns are the leading cause of death or among the leading cause of death of children in Ohio. Particularly, again, when CDF Ohio's research shows that the vast majority of what they call childhood firearm deaths involve individuals between the ages of 15 and 19. Now, again, that age group encompasses some individuals who are actually children and then some who are adults. The Ohio Department of Health breaks this down again. They stop at age 17. Their definition of a child is what you would expect. It's the definition of a child, 0 to 17. Once you reach the age of majority, you're no longer a child, you are an adult. And according to the Ohio Department of Health's report, the number of gun-involved deaths among Ohio children is much higher among 15, 16, and 17-year-olds than it is among that lower, younger cohort. So my guess is that if you actually broke it out by year, what you would find is that a majority of the child gun deaths that CDF Ohio reports are actually 18 and 19-year-olds. I don't have that information, but I think it's a pretty good assumption. The bottom line, though, is that gun-involved deaths are not a leading cause of death among Ohio children. Guns are not a leading cause of death among Ohio children. I am pleased to report that at some point, the Cleveland Plain Dealer changed its headline. They also added some additional information into its story. They did note that Children's Defense Fund Ohio defines a child as somebody between the ages of 1 and 19. What they did not do, however, is look for another source of information to either corroborate or debunk the claims of CDF Ohio. And I want to go back to the headline here. Gun violence is among the leading causes of death for Ohio kids. Experts are alarmed. Now, again, going back to what I said before, there's bias in the newsroom. There are time pressures in the newsroom. Sometimes they're just bad reporters, bad editors. I certainly have made my editorial mistakes in the past. Bad headline writers, for that matter. If the headline had simply said, gun violence is among the leading causes of death for Ohio kids, comma, group claims, that would be one thing, right? Because now it's not the paper making that assertion. Now it's clear that the paper is reporting on a group's assertion. Which, to be fair, you find that out pretty quickly in the story itself, but that's not what the headline indicates. The headline presents that information as a fact reported by the paper, which means to me the paper's credibility is at stake here. And that headline is just not true. Even the corrected headline, I don't believe, is accurate. But if that's going to be the angle that the paper takes, that again, this is not coming from a group, but this is coming from the paper itself, then it is up to the paper to do some independent research rather than just regurgitating the talking points from a gun control group or a pro-gun control group, let's say. And they didn't do that. Again, it took me less than an hour to find out this information from the Ohio Department of Health. It would not have taken a plain dealer reporter all that long to find that information themselves and to include that information. It could have been a few paragraphs. While the Children's Defense Fund Ohio says that gun violence is among the leading causes of death for Ohio children, the Ohio Department of Health, using a different definition of child and then say what that definition is, found that firearms were involved in only 5% of child deaths in the state between 2018 and 2022. The leading cause of death, medical issues, other leading causes of death, accidents, but again, firearms, including suicide, homicide, and accidents resulting accounted for 6% of all childhood fatalities in the state. That wouldn't have been difficult. I don't think that it would have made the story less informative. Quite the opposite, as a matter of fact. I think it would have made the story more informative, and the reader could draw their own conclusion about what to do with this information. The paper could have even looked to see where there were areas of corroboration. And to be fair, I think that there were a couple of areas of corroboration between what CDF Ohio was saying and the data compiled by the Ohio Department of Health. Vast majority of both suicides and accidents involving firearms in Ohio appear to have involved unsecured handguns. Now, the Ohio Department of Health notes that in about half of the suicides that were investigated, the information on how that gun was stored is not available. Smaller percentage in accidental firearm fatalities, but we know that about 71% of accidental fatalities involving a firearm in Ohio involved an unsecured firearm. I think it's about 39% of suicides. There were about 13% of suicides where the gun was secured, and then the rest of that information, almost 40, I think it's like 48%, the information is not known. So there's an area of an agreement, right? Unsecured firearms, are involved in a large number of accidental firearm injuries. And at the very least, I think it's fair to say, involved in a significant number of suicides among youth in Ohio. CDF Ohio and the Ohio Department of Health were in agreement that among children in Ohio, however you want to define it, white kids are much more likely to take their own lives with a firearm. Black kids are much more likely to be homicide victims. And more likely, although not hugely so, but more likely to be involved in accidental firearm injuries as well. Those are areas of agreement. But again, there's a lot of areas of disagreement, including the bottom line for CDF Ohio, saying that firearms are among the leading causes of death for Ohio kids, which, again, is simply not the case. I don't say this to minimize those deaths. Every one of the, I believe, 315 firearm-involved fatalities among children in Ohio between 2018 and 2022, according to the Ohio Department of Health, every one of those lives matters. You know, we talk, I think, on a fairly regular basis here on this podcast about mental health, about suicide prevention. Obviously, you know, those of you who have been readers for Buried Arms for quite some time know that really the guy who made Buried Arms possible, Bob Owens, took his own life. And so this is a topic that is very close to my heart. Whether we're talking with, you know, Sarah Albrecht about Hold My Guns, we're talking with some of the folks involved in the Wisconsin Gun Store Project, Walk the Talk America. You know, suicide prevention is something that, again, I take very seriously. And it is one of, I'd say it's one of my priorities as a gun owner and as a Second Amendment advocate. I want to see people safe. I don't want to see people take their own lives. Same thing is true when it comes to homicide. You know, I don't know any gun owner who's happy to see high murder rates. And I know a lot of gun owners who have been cheering and celebrating the fact that homicide declined at a record level in 2025. The lowest, I mean, it looks like we still don't have the official FBI stats, but it looks like the homicide rate last year nationally going to be the lowest at least since 1960, when the FBI started keeping track of these things. But you could argue the lowest homicide rate in a century or more. That's a very good thing. Why is that happening? According to gun control activists, it shouldn't be happening, right? They said after the Bruin decision that violent crime is going to explode. When Donald Trump came into office and, oh my God, he's, you know, pulling people away from the ATF and putting them towards immigration, violent crime. I mean, they've been saying that violent crime is going to increase, even as violent crime has been declining at record levels. But again, I don't know a single gun owner who's unhappy to see the murder rate go down. I know a lot of gunners who are thrilled to see that development. So we can talk about this, but well, again, we need to talk about why that's happening. And it's not happening because of any new national gun control laws that have been passed. I know the gun control lobby wants to say it's because of the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act and all of these gun violence intervention programs that have been put in place. But you're seeing this same decline in communities that don't have big community gun violence prevention programs in place, as well as those cities that do. You're seeing this in red states and in blue states. You're seeing this in states with restrictive gun laws. You're seeing this in states with constitutional carry. So I don't think that you can give gun control the credit here. I think there's something deeper going on. And again, I'm not impressed with CDF Ohio's recommendations for, you know, gun storage laws, universal background check laws, particularly, by the way, when we're talking about, supposedly we're talking about children, right? Well, children can't buy guns legally to begin with, so universal background check law isn't going to impact these individuals. If a 16-year-old wants to get their hands on a gun, they can do so even in a state with universal background check laws, as we have seen in places like New York and California. So, I bring this up, and I wanted to talk about it today, A, because I was so aggravated by seeing this original reporting by the Plain Dealer. And then when I saw that they had corrected the headline and added some information to the story, my first impression, honestly, was like, oh, good. You know, they did the right thing. And then as I start reading the corrected story, I'm like, ah, but they still left some really important information out. So as I sat down to do today's show, this was still very much top of mind. And these are the challenges, some of the challenges that we deal with as gun owners, right? It's not just that we're dealing with anti-gun politicians. It's not just that we're dealing with anti-gun judges. We are dealing as well, again, with a media that broadly is not interested in protecting our right to keep and bear arms or even viewing it as a positive. And when stories like this are pushed out there, that rely on the talking points of a group that is all in favor of more gun control laws, that does have an impact. It's supposed to have an impact on the public. And it makes our job harder. You know, there are going to be some gun control advocates who will take issue with the fact that I even am trying to correct this. They'll say that I'm putting guns ahead of kids, that I'm more interested in protecting my firearms than I am in protecting kindergartners, which is not the case at all. And if the media, if the Plain Dealer had done a better job of reporting, both in its original report and its corrected report, I wouldn't have to be making these arguments. I wouldn't have to be presenting these statistics. But again, for a variety of reasons, I think we are going to continue to see bad reporting, in some cases, outright falsehoods reported as facts. And yes, we have to be Second Amendment advocates. We have to be grassroots lobbyists. We have to support those groups that are using litigation to defend our Second Amendment rights. But we also have to be media watchdogs. And to that end, I guess we also need to be cheerleaders for the Second Amendment. The other thing that I was talking about on today's show, we kind of mentioned this when, you know, Harmy Dillon went to the range a few weeks ago. We had Braden Langley from Langley Outdoors on talking about the reaction. A lot of people, you know, giving her grief for her shooting stance, for her rather loose grouping. There was another tweet I saw kind of went viral on X this week. A Twitch streamer holding up her new rifle. And again, a lot of people, and, you know, and she said, I've never shot it. It's not loaded. This is her first gun. Doesn't really know much about it. And there were a lot of people who just, you know, did what the internet does and criticized the gun she bought, criticized her for buying the gun. And I'm talking about pro-Second Amendment people, ostensibly. And I've seen, again, a number of folks talk about how, you know, we need to be more welcoming of those individuals. So, yes, we need to be grassroots advocates. We need to help support litigation. We need to be media watchdogs. But we also need to be evangelical and ecumenical when it comes to we the people's right to keep and bear arms. And when you see somebody who doesn't vote like you or think like you or, listen, I mean, I am not of the Twitch streamer world. I'm just not. But so long as that individual is interested in being a responsible gun owner, they're not buying a gun so they can, you know, pose with it on social media. They're not buying a gun so they can call themselves really badass online and make videos where they're irresponsibly handling a gun, looking like an idiot. I'm all in favor of them embracing the right to keep their arms. And I think that the Second Amendment community needs to work towards helping them do so safely and responsibly, to be a good ambassador for the Second Amendment. That's what I used to talk about all the time on Cam and Company. And I think that still holds true today. Among the many hats that we have to wear in order to support and defend and strengthen our right to keep mirror arms, we have to be good ambassadors for that right, because majority of Americans don't own guns. Majority of Americans consume media that is anti-gun and anti-Second Amendment. And that may change in the future, but it's not the case right now. And so we need to be the best advocates that we can be. And again, that involves wearing an awful lot of hats. Today, it's the media watchdog hat. We'll see what hat I'm wearing on Monday. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. Start there with a case out of Evansville, Indiana. 6 weeks after avoiding jail, an Evansville teen has been charged with murder. And it's not just that this is 6 weeks after a teenager managed to avoid jail. Noah Hogan is the name of this 16-year-old. He was sentenced to probation rather than a year in prison after he pleaded guilty to felony auto theft. Now, again, that's a nonviolent offense. It is a felony offense. It's a nonviolent offense. Took a plea deal. It's not uncommon for somebody in that situation to get probation instead of jail time. Whether we like it or not, it's just not uncommon. What is a little unusual, though, is that even before Noah Hogan got probation in that case, he had been involved in the juvenile justice system. And in fact, a judge had previously said that he was beyond rehabilitation in the juvenile justice system. So if he was beyond rehabilitation, then why was he given probation in that case? And now again, 42 days later, after he was granted probation, Hogan is accused of murder. According to the Courier and Press newspaper, officers found 23-year-old Trey Lavelle at an apartment complex just after noon on Tuesday. He had been shot at least once in his upper body. He was taken to a local hospital where he succumbed to his injuries. By the time police arrived at the apartment complex, the shooter was gone. But a witness pointed detectives towards Hogan. And Hogan was ultimately apprehended on Tuesday afternoon. He's now being held without bond on four counts, including murder, criminal recklessness with a deadly weapon. The Courier and Press newspaper says the prosecutors on Tuesday wasted no time in seeking the revocation of Hogan's probation in the 2025 auto theft case. And by Wednesday afternoon, when he made his initial appearance in the Vandenberg County Circuit Court, he faced the prospect not just of spending a year in jail, but of spending the remainder of his adolescence and much of his adult life in the custody of the Indiana Department of Correction. It is possible that there is a self-defense angle here. Hogan's sister apparently had been in a relationship with Trey Lavelle. They had a child together. And his sister reportedly told detectives that she and Lavelle got in an argument, which prompted her brother to, quote, get involved. She said that, yes, Hogan shot Lavelle and then fled the scene, but she said that she saw Lavelle holding a gun and taking a shooting stance before Hogan fired the first shot. So it is, again, possible that Hogan raises a self-defense statute or defense of others. In this case, Hogan not allowed to possess a firearm as a result of his probation and the fact that he's 16 years old. So he could still be charged with that, even if prosecutors ultimately determined that he was acting in self-defense and this was not a cold-blooded murder. But still, this is not his first time in court. When he was arrested on charges of auto theft, he initially was sent to a juvenile court, but a Superior Court magistrate last December found him, quote, beyond rehabilitation in the juvenile justice system. And then the following month, that's when he pled guilty to two counts of auto theft. If a magistrate says that this 16-year-old is beyond rehabilitation, what that tells me is that this wasn't the first time that Hogan had shown up in juvenile court. Those records are typically sealed. The Courier and Press newspaper doesn't list any crimes that Hogan was convicted of as a juvenile. But I can't imagine the circumstances in which somebody, a 16-year-old, shows up in juvenile court charged with stealing a car, essentially. And the judge says, man, there is no helping you. You got to go to adult court. That just strikes me as odd. So there is going to be more to this story coming out. But again, I think the big question right now, pardon me, I should have turned off my phone before I started doing this, is why on earth this 16-year-old was out, why he got a probationary sentence after a judge had previously said juvenile court is of no use at this point. You've got to go to adult court. What's the point of getting another slap on the wrist? All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story. Not a lot of details here. This is, I believe, from Pennsylvania, the Observer Reporter newspaper. Headline, alleged burglar shot by woman in Brownsville. What we know is that a 69-year-old man was taken to a hospital via Lifelight this week after he is accused of breaking into a home and assaulting a woman who shot him several times when he refused to leave. A paper says that his condition was unknown as of Wednesday. So that the complaint indicated that the alleged victim, a woman who was not identified, was able to identify this 69-year-old man, Ronald Rosiak, as the person who was in her home, did not explain how she knew him, or apparently if she knew him. But the woman apparently called police, I guess this had been on Tuesday night, after Rosiak repeatedly rang her doorbell around 11:30 in the evening. She called 911 again 15 minutes later and told dispatchers that Rosiak was then beating on her door. At some point, Rosiak allegedly grabbed a brick and then broke the front window, the glass window on her front door. I managed to get inside, went upstairs to the woman's bedroom, where he reportedly yelled at her while standing between her and the doorway. The woman then told police she told Rosiak to leave, but he walked towards her instead, which is when she shot him in the leg with a revolver. She said she fired another four shots as he kept moving forward, one of which hit him in the right side of the head. Woman told police that Rosiak actually chased her to the second floor bathroom, prevented her from shutting the door. By that time, she had no more ammunition in her revolver. And she said Rosiak forced her to the ground, pulled out some of her hair, injured her arms, her back, and her neck. He then held the woman down and tried to cover her face with, I believe, like a towel there, according to what she told authorities. She was able to finally wiggle free, ran downstairs, where apparently the complaint said police were waiting. I hope that wasn't the case. I just have this image of, you know, the sounds of struggle upstairs and officers downstairs just, Bob, what do you think we should do? I hope that that was not the case. But regardless, police found Rosiak in the upstairs bathroom. He has now been charged with aggravated assault, burglary, criminal trespass, criminal mischief, terroristic threats, unlawful restraint, possession of an instrument of crime, loitering, and prowling at night, as well as simple assault and harassment. Woman not facing any charges at all. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of takeaways here. But one of the first things I thought of as I was going through this case is, you know, the arguments that we hear from anti-gunners all the time about, quote-unquote, large capacity magazines, right? Why do you need more than X number of rounds? Why do you need that? The average defensive gun use, 2.8 shots fired. Why do you need more than 3 rounds? Why do you need more than 4, 5, or 10? Well, in this case, woman emptied her revolver, shot her assailant multiple times, but her assailant was still mobile, still able to run after her, still able to grab her, force her to the ground, and brutally assault her. So why do you need more than, you know, the 5 or 6 rounds in a revolver? Because sometimes that's not going to be enough. That's why. There could be multiple assailants. You could miss. You could hit that individual with multiple shots. And they still may pose a threat to your life. The bottom line is, why do you need X number of rounds? Because you don't know how many you'll need, is the honest answer. And the state can't guarantee that you're going to need 2.8 rounds when somebody breaks into your home, because the state can't guarantee that one person is going to break into your home. Thankfully, Pennsylvania does not have a magazine ban in place. And I hope that this woman will maybe think about an upgrade. I mean, I'm all in favor of carrying a revolver. Carry what makes you comfortable. But I'm guessing at this point she is likely going to be looking for something with the option for a few more rounds and the ability to easily swap out a magazine if necessary. All right, on to today's good deed of the day. From Texas, a good Samaritan recalling rescuing a woman from a Lake Dallas home explosion. This was from Channel 8 in Dallas-Fort Worth. You might recall this home explosion happened last Thursday. It did make some national news. One woman was seriously injured. And as Channel 8 in Dallas-Fort Worth says, neighbors still searching for answers. One of them, Jacob Saul, who saw what happened, and he said, you know, my neighbor's house just blew up, so called 911. He said he immediately sprang into action, running towards the home, where he found his neighbor, Jessica Bailey Lopez, trapped under the collapsed remains of her house. He said, I lifted up a portion of the roof and then I crawled under and her arm was broken and they were so burned. He said, I had to grab her by like the armpits, turn her around and then pull her off of the table and onto the ground there. When emergency crews arrived, they found the home engulfed in flames, nearly leveled at that point. But Saul says at that point, he'd been able to pull Lopez to safety. Before things got even worse, he said, when we got her across the street, the whole thing just went up like torches, essentially. Other neighbors had to be evacuated because of the danger there. Channel 8 says some concerns remain. Amanda Hughes, another neighbor, said she was able to come home, I guess, just a couple of days ago. And she said, you know, it still makes me a little nervous to be here. I don't feel safe. There's a gas line right under my mailbox. There actually has been a lawsuit filed against a company called Atmos Energy, alleging that the blast blew the roof off of Lopez's home, scattered insulation across the neighborhood, sent debris into nearby streets. Jacob Saul actually has not been able to make it home yet. He says they're saying tomorrow he might be able to come home. So, you know, again, I don't know what led up to this explosion. Don't know who is to blame and whether or not the company is responsible. But I do know that in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing for a neighbor in need, Jacob Saul, we thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is all the time we've got for you on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I do want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday. We're going to be, I've got a guest. I always hate to preview stuff because, you know, sometimes things come up. But tentatively scheduled to talk with a guest about kind of a nice twist in the debanking saga that we have seen for some companies in the firearms industry over the past few years. You know, where big companies have said, oh, we can't do business with you. You make guns, you make ammunition, you make holsters in some cases, right? We've seen this executive order from President Trump that is designed to put an end to that. A lot of big banks have actually come forward and said, we are no longer you know, discriminating against individuals in the firearms industry, which is great to see. But hopefully we'll be able to tell you on Monday about, again, a nice little twist to one company that had to deal with being debanked. And they say living well is the best revenge. I think this is an example of that. So hopefully we'll bring that story to you on Monday. In the meantime, be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the rest of today and Friday and over the weekend. We're going to be keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. And there's a lot of it these days. We've had some big court hearings, Rody versus Bonta, Ninth Circuit en banc on Wednesday. We've got the 3D printer ban passing in Washington State. You've still got almost two dozen gun control bills that Virginia Governor Abigail Spanberger could sign, could allow to become law without her signature, theoretically could veto. I just don't see that happening. But there is a lot going on in the state legislatures. There's a lot going on in courthouses. And as we talked about today, there's even some stuff going on in your local newspaper, your local TV news, that we're going to have to deal with. So we've got all of that covered for you at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, a VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. All I have to do is go to bearingarms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT. You can get 60% off your membership. If you are a VIP Gold and Platinum member, you know, every tier of support, you get additional benefits. One of the benefits I enjoy the most for VIP Gold and Platinum members, every Wednesday we do a live chat, 1:30 Eastern, with Hot Airs, Ed Morrissey, and myself. There are a lot of other live chats. It's not just Ed and I. Stephen Cruiser, Stephen Green, Vodka Pundit, they do a live chat, 5 o'clock somewhere. So there's a lot of opportunities to participate with Town Hall Media writers. But Ed and I, in addition to doing the live chat at 1:30 Eastern every Wednesday, once a month, we do an after party because we recognize that not everybody can join us at 1:30 Eastern. So once a month, we'll sit down and we'll do an extra hour plus chat. We did it last night, and it was great. Actually, got to meet some VIP Gold and Platinum members hadn't had the chance to see before. Got to learn a little bit more about VIP Gold and Platinum members who've signed up. We had a good conversation about some serious topics and some not so serious topics. It's basically, you know, wherever the VIP Gold and Platinum members want to take the conversation. But it was a great time. I'd love for you to be a part of the next live chat and the next after show. So again, go to bearingarms.com/subscribe. Use that promo code FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, and you can get 60% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership. Hope you have a great rest of your week. Thanks so much for being a part of the program today. Looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.